Blog Talk Radio.
By the way,
one day na wakateka wakamba, Pilato na wakateka, arebe pushama kwezon wakamba. Pilato,
huh?
Okay, muli hai pavaneta muli wino, tuika de tondoro, busedi casino.
Thank you for joining us this morning. This is Zambia Blog Talk Radio. Saturday, May 31st, the year is running fast, and 2014, we welcome you to our show as we continue our discussion, which I have entitled the series, Holding African Government Accountable. And joining us this morning for a very brief short time, she's just going to be with us for a short time, is Honorable Sabina Wanjiru Chege. She's the member of parliament for the Muranga County in Nairobi, in Kenya. I nearly said Nairobi. And we are very grateful for Honorable Sabina joining us. Honorable Sabina, good evening to you and welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and good morning to you. How are you doing?
We're doing fine, ma'am. You have a very rich background in radio, media, to start our conversation. What made you leave that and get into politics?
I just needed to serve the people, and I was tired of complaining on the way things were being done. And I thought I had something to offer. And so because I was interacting with the community for a long time, I decided to go to the other side and start making the laws, and especially on the issues that I felt that they were not clearly addressed, and I just needed to be the voice of the voiceless in Parliament.
Absolutely. That was an excellent... Do you have anybody, I mean, a political figure or somebody that was inspiring you to take this move?
Well, if I go to Africa, I'll go to Nelson Mandela, who had to give his all, to give out his life for... to make sure that his people were liberated. But from the family line, there's no one who has ever been in politics, not even in any political leadership. But I felt that I needed to be a different person. Even if you didn't have a family background or history of people being in politics, I'm the last one in a family of nine, and I decided to be the first one to join politics.
Okay, that's interesting. The youngest one decides to take a political career. Now, let me take you to the issue at hand here, Honorable Sabina. I've been doing a series on this program based on what has happened in Nigeria. Before there was September 11 in the United States, there were terrorist attacks on the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi and, I believe, in Tanzania in 1998. How did that affect and shape the nation of peace? How did that terrorist attack shape and affect the nation of Kenya?
Well, it truly affected us a lot because the 1998 bombings, a lot of Kenyan families were affected. And it was really something that was unexpected. And a lot of families, you know, they went out, they lost their family members, and it happened within the city center. And so many, even the government itself, was caught unaware at that point. And terrorism was quite a new concept. It's not like today that almost everybody will talk about a terrorist, but before then, we didn't have initial or earlier experience with fighting terrorism. And so it was really a big scare for the country, and also very big loss to the families of the people who were affected, and a big loss to the Kenyans.
In view of what is happening in Nigeria, and Kenya is also having its share of these challenges, Honorable Sabina, Al-Shabaab, there was a report that the Nigerian government didn't want to share intelligence information with their American counterparts because the security in Nigerian government was compromised. We are hearing about corrupt people in the Kenyan government, immigration. What is your comment on that? How do you respond to that?
My response is very clear. I think the Kenyan government has really tried to fight terrorism and worked very hard, but my biggest question is who is actually attacking us? Is it really Al-Shabaab, and are we sure it's Al-Shabaab, or do we have other outside forces that are coming in pretext of Al-Shabaab to attack the country so that then they can force Kenya to take certain political direction? And I want to you to know that Kenya has started that relationship with the East and almost going to ignore the West. And I think that has really not gone very well with so many quarters. And so I feel like sometimes when African countries, they try to stand on their feet, and when they have leaders who want to stand on their feet and actually rule their country without Western influence, that the Western people have a way of trying to come into their country through other sources. And so I'm not so sure that whoever is fighting Kenya is only purely Al-Shabaab. We might have other outside forces, because we've not really made arrests and like confirmation that this is really Al-Shabaab. And so my worry is, when will Africa ever stand by its own feet? When will the African leaders be allowed to make their own decisions? You remember back in 2013, when Kenyans were going to the elections, we had some pronouncement that choices have consequences. The president that we have now, the deputy president, there are so many people who are Westerners who didn't want them to come, and they had like their preferred candidate. But the Kenyans went out and did elections. And so are we now facing the consequences that we were told, that choices have consequences? And we as leaders in Kenya, that's the biggest dilemma that we are facing, that somebody somewhere might be sabotaging the current government and actually even inciting the opposition against the current government.
You know what, Honorable Sabina, what you have said is really worth considering seriously, because it looks like since the new government came into power, suddenly you have been hit so many times.
You know, we have so many challenges, and I think this current government is facing challenges that no other government has faced. What did we start with? We started with fire at the airport, and nobody really can tell where the fire came from. And that is our main international airport. From there, we went to Westgate, where we had a lot of people, you know, losing their lives, and it was bad. When again we had this the terrorism attacks that have been so, you know, frequent, not like before. And, you know, the government is really also having internal challenges, where we have the new constitution to deal with, new dispensation, the devolution, and, you know, leaders who are also not very sure of their position. And so the government, or the leader, our president, has really had so many challenges. But when it comes to terrorism, and now you hear so many of these attacks happening, my suspicion was when the Westerners decided to, and I won't use the word force, their people out of the country. And, you know, they were not given an option of whether you want to stay in Kenya or not. And they were told, you must leave now. So I evacuated from their hotels. And the big question as a leader I asked myself is there anything that the Westerners know that we don't know? We have seen the submarines now guarding their embassies. So is there something that they know that we don't know? That's my question, and I keep on asking the same question. You know, recently we've had issues or allegations that there are some people who are listening to the conversation of His Excellency the President and His Deputy and some senior cabinet ministers. So we ask you, why would anybody want to listen to the conversations of His Excellency or His Cabinet Minister or His Deputy? So basically there's a lot of suspicion. There's a lot of things happening. But all I would like to say is that, you know, Kenyans prayed, and the biggest challenge that we overcame is that we didn't have violence at 2013 election. And even now, you know, that Kenyans are believers and will not allow anyone to interfere with the leadership of this nation.
One of the things that we've been saying on this forum, Honorable Sabina, is that Africa in general needs to revisit its priorities in terms of investing, training our security forces. I want you to comment on that and also say something about the African Union. We don't seem to see an African Union which is proactive. What is going on there?
I think what happened is we have a history, and our history is we were colonized. And so I don't think the colonization has really left us. And so we have that blood of colonization. And so somehow we got the dependency syndrome, that sometimes we want to depend on the other people. But I feel Africa is rich. Africa can be able, if African Union is strong, the leaders can be able to stand together, make their decision. They can be able to improve the tourism in Africa. We have resources, we have minerals. I think, you know, Africa is a continent that really, it's really a blessed continent that has no really major extremes. And so I feel that if it's Africans, we can be able to speak with one voice. That would really help. But the problem is that we were colonized by different people. And so sometimes our mindset, starting from the way our education is set, so we have a lot of illiteracy, we have a lot of people, depending on who colonized which country, then the approach of matters and things is very different. And so we really need maybe fast work on our education to make sure that we have something that is in common with our African countries. And number two, we also need now to start investing in on security. I'm sure African readers can just sit together and come up with a solution on our security without depending on a lot of other people. We had a discussion in the country about one of the telephone service providers being given, you know, like a leeway on security, and so people said no, because that company is almost controlled by, you know, Kenyans, but by foreigners. Even currently, our security system, our communication system, one of the main companies is not a Kenyan company. 60% is owned by foreigners. So we have really given out everything, our intelligence, our communication. We are kind of naked. We are not covered. We need to start covering ourselves.
Wow. You're listening to Zanda Block Talk Radio. Yes. We are privileged to be speaking to Honorable Sabina Chege, a member of parliament from Muranga County in the great nation of Kenya. We're running out of time here, Honorable Sabina, and we do thank you for taking the time to be with us. Let me just address one or two things here, switching. My main issue here was to talk about terrorism, but like you have already said, my colleague is actually sending, we are discussing behind the scenes in the chat room, is, like you have already said, the colonial masters and the stigma that it left on us, as like you have ably said, it has really, really divided us. Kenya, one of Kenya's mainstay or income generation is tourism, without a doubt. And I would also like to believe, just like in any other African country, most of the tour companies are operated by foreigners. Let's talk about the situation in Malindi district, the Malindi sex tourism allegations or saga. What is going on there?
About Malindi and the sex tourism, it's unfortunate that a lot of my hotels in that area are owned by the foreigners, and so a lot of child sex prostitution was introduced by the foreigners. And because of also the people from that side, some of them are very poor, then you end up having very young children be recruited into sex prostitution or into prostitution. But what I would like to say is that I think without even going far, if you are able to attract our local people, Kenyans has a very high middle class. And even not only middle class, everybody in Kenya can afford to actually go to the, we have our game park, and we also have now our hotels. And if we can have the rates that accommodate local people, and not only in Kenya, but basically in African countries, we seem only to target the high-end market. We seem to only target the foreigners. But I think we need to start local tourism. We need to start encouraging our own people to start visiting their own country and to start enjoying the wildlife, you know, the game reserve that we have, the beautiful sceneries that we have. And I know with that it's a huge and a lot of money that can come from there. And from within the African countries, can we fast market each other's country. And I think with that confidence, if we are able to do that, then we can really go very far with journalism. But it's unfortunate that we welcome the outsiders who come in and introduce new cultures, some of them very ungodly, and we end up getting swallowed in them. And so we've been affected. It's our children. This is our future generation. If you have young children, might be some of them less than 10 years going to prostitution, what are we doing to our generation? Are we going really to have a good society or future generation that can be able to stand and bring up the children of their own? And I think we are killing ourselves, and we need to think. I prefer earlier when we had the African traditions that used to guide and even set the rules, and people will not go beyond that. But it's unfortunate that when the Christianity and even the Muslims came about, it seems that we also getting tapped into other foreign cultures very easily, and now we no longer have anything that we can call it our own African culture.
It's poverty, Honorable Sabina. We need to fight this stigma of poverty. Let me allow one or two questions before we let you go. Let me go to Canada. Canada, please go ahead.
Honorable Sabina, thank you for joining Zambia Block Talk Radio. This morning we were discussing the difficulties our friends are facing in northern Nigeria with Boko Haram, yourselves are being attacked almost now daily by our friends who are coming from Somalia. And one of the things we are saying, even in Zambia, these things could arrive, is poverty, the disparity of those who are living in the rural areas and those who are living in Nairobi. No matter how many soldiers we are going to have, Honorable Sabina, if we do not address the disparity between those in the village and those in Nairobi or in town, this problem is here to stay with us. What are you doing in your country? What are you doing in your area to make sure that the standard of living, which is in Nairobi, one day can be found in rural Kenya?
Okay. Thank you very much. But my observation is that there are some people who live in the rural areas and are doing so well compared to the people who live in Nairobi. Because we also need to know that in Nairobi we have also a lot of slum areas and a lot of people who are even street families. So it is not about where somebody is living, but what are you doing about your life? Personally, I've tried to do some empowerment program for the youth groups and women back at home. But basically, as I said, it is very sad that every time when people are dependent, you go and find that back at home or in the villages, you have farms. People can go back to the farming. We can be able to improve the marketing. But you still find that the young people don't want to go and work. They want to spend their days drinking. They want to stay because at the end of the day, their honorable member will come and donate something. The parents who have had children, we have free primary education in Kenya. And we also have free secondary education. But even with the government trying to subsidize, because it's not really free, there's also some amount of money that is paid. You find a parent who's the child is going to Form 1, but they were not prepared. Why? Because they know the government will provide a bursary, because they know they will go to the honorable member and ask for money. It's the same thing I say, I don't give excuses with pregnancy. Somebody gets pregnant for 9 months. How do you then go and start asking for money to go for maternity? And you had 9 months even to save 100 shillings. So sometimes even when you go to the groups in the village, you ask them, what ideas do you have? Then you can be able to engage and try to add value to the ideas. But sometimes you find that people, and it's really a very bad prisoner that we have said to our people, that people are so dependent. They just want, what would the government do for us? But do you stand and ask yourself, what will you do for your country? Recently, I visited Turkey, and I found out that they have they're not very rich businessmen, but the middle ones, even some teachers, they have come up together. They donate some little amounts to our education because they believe that with education, they can be able to empower their people. And so what they have done with the money that each one of them contributes, and they're offering scholarships, and then they know what are we lacking in our country, if it's engineers, they sponsor engineering students, who then go out to the country and study and come back and now train and actually work for their country. But I find it very hard for us as Africans to do the same. Sometimes we just want, what is it? We just want to ask, what is the government doing for us? But we also ask ourselves, what are we doing for our own country? And I think once we start thinking that way, you start knowing that change comes with you. Don't look at what the other people are going to do for you, but do your bit. And when I also do my bit, then we're going to change our way of thinking and we're going to change our country.
Interesting scenario. Let me just allow one more question here. We're actually running out of time. Zebron, very quickly, go ahead.
Thank you so much, Nathan. And how are you, Honorable MP? My quick question would be... my quick question would be, I know we just talked about our last program, we were talking about women's rights and how women are abused pretty much almost everywhere. My question is, like, I know Kenya just passed a law where men could marry as many women, I guess, as they can without, as far as I know, without the wife's consent. How has been the reaction from the people as well as people in power like you? And I heard also quickly that there's an article in Kenya that says, like, one of the police officers, a female police officer, was apprehended because her skirt was a little bit too tight. But, you know, we don't really see stories of a man who's sagging and has been picked up or something like that. So I just wanted to see the reaction of how the women's rights is going on in Kenya. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll start with the first one. I didn't really get the second question, but the first one about the marriage bill that we debated in Parliament, I won't say it's the most misconceived bill that I've had, because I think the people, the public interpreted it. Even our own members of Parliament did the wrong interpretation. What Kenyan did, he defined marriages and the different types of marriages. And I won't tell you, if you are Muslim, you follow the Muslim law, and that marriage is not affected at all by the new marriage bill. If you're Christian and you're married under the Christian law, that means one wife, one husband, you are not affected at all by that bill. And if you also go to the civil, where you go to the attorneys, again, it's one man, one wife, and so that also means that you're not affected by the marriage bill at all. The only marriage institution that, or marriage kind of setup that was affected was customary. And the only beauty, and I want to say, to look at the positive side of it, was that now, if you're married under the customary law, now the law allows you to get a marriage certificate. And what the law said is that after 3 months, once you're married under the customary marriage, you now need to go and file that you're now married under the customary after 3 months, and so you can now be given a certificate. Different customs in Kenya allow men to marry more than one wife, and that means that if you choose to go the customary way, that means you will follow your custom. We had one man called Akukudeja, who had over 45 wives, others had 70, others had 3 or 4. So it depends with your culture. But I also want to say that the culture does not dictate that you marry many wives. You can also be married by customary law, but you only have one wife. The only thing that now changes is that now, when it comes to marrying a second wife under the customary law, then they removed the word consent. And the consent was removed because various customs allow various types of marriage. We had some of the customs that they were, or some of the cultures, that the wives were actually the ones who are looking for a second wife, and not even telling the husband. The husband would only find a woman, another woman at home, and he would interpret for himself that now I have a second wife. Others are men who now went out and married a second wife. So basically that's why they removed the word consent, and this does not affect any other marriage apart from the customary. And that means even if a man has 10 wives, all of them will hold marriage certificates that they are legal wives of this man. And so that means because of inheritance and the property and anything else that will come on the way, they will share equally the properties of that man. But the marriage or the marriage property deal also says that it depends by when you got married and what that man had. So you cannot come and inherit what the man had gotten the first wife. When you get, you join the marriage as a second wife, you start making your own wealth and you can only inherit from when you got married, and that goes on to the other wives. But I want to say that if you choose to go through the customary marriage, then you cannot go the Christian way. If you choose to go the Christian way, you cannot mix it with the customary way. If you go Islam way, you cannot mix it with the customary way. So it is very clear to the point. And so the issue of that now men are allowed to marry many wives is not true, because not very, it's actually a small percentage of men in Kenya who actually marry through customary. A lot of them will do the custom, be it the dowry, but they will do a Christian marriage. And once you do the Christian marriage, that means one man, one wife.
Honorable Sabina, Zebron, thank you for asking that question. You have really clarified that matter very well. Final question, your final word to the, not just the Kenyan diaspora, but every African living in the diaspora. You have discussed and helped us understand not only the situation in Kenya, but honorable, generally what the challenge Africa is facing. What is your message to the African living in the diaspora, Honorable Sabina?
For the Africans who are living in the diaspora, I just want to tell them Mr. West Home is best. And you should know that you actually hold the keys to change your country. And so become the light. Be the light. Instead of criticizing, try to understand what's happening. Talk to your leaders. Support them. Go back to your villages if possible. I know all of us came from a village. There must be a needy family somewhere, or some children are not going to school. The little you can, that single drop, when it adds to another drop, it actually makes the whole ocean. So please do not ignore the little or the minimum you see you can be able to contribute. Do not ignore what you can be able to do now. If you have not gone back to support your country, do it now. Sometimes we read from the papers, and maybe it's not, what we read is not really correct, or what we hear from the media. Take time to understand your country. Time to go back. Take time even to go to the village. And we are praying that one day, one time, that we will change from the attitude of dependency to the people who want to work towards making their country better. Be praying for your country, pray for each other, and especially for the leaders. Sometimes the leaders have the pressure from the people. They have a lot of stress from other governments, even from their own people they are leading, to their families, and so they need your prayers. Pray for your country, pray for your leaders. And I know one day, one time, Africa will stand strong and will be the powerful continent in the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, Honorable Sabina Wanjiru Jeke, Parliament for Murang'a County. She is also a person for Education Committee in Kenya. When I was looking for somebody from the Kenyan leadership to talk to address the Kenyan situation, Prophetess Mwaka came to the rescue, good friend team of this radio show. He helped me connect to Honorable. So thank Prophetess Mwaka. And Honorable, I also thank your sister Grace, who put up a very nice bio of yourself, which we put on the website. I'm very thankful to Grace for helping us. Honorable Sabina, we do wish you the best in your endeavors, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you so much also for giving me time to share with your listeners what's happening in Africa, and especially in Kenya. And thank you for that opportunity. May God bless you.
Bless you too. We do look forward to you coming back. I'll be reaching out to you, ma'am.
No problem. Anytime. Thank you.
God bless. All right. That was Honorable Sabina discussing the terror situation in Kenya and education and all those things that are going on there. Zebron, thank you for asking that question. I think she's clarified it very well. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, because we had all confusion, you know, with the media here, media there, so the whole thing was a little bit confusing, but it's been clarified, and I appreciate for answering.
specified, and I'm very grateful that you asked it. I didn't even have it on my list of questions to ask on the secondary. That was a very good question, and it puts a lot of things into perspective. Now, I also want you, as we continue our discussion here, Dr. Patrick Bachisebwe, Dr. Chongo in Arkansas, and everybody else, Roger, she has made three cardinal statements in her closing remarks. Zebron, I'll start with you. When I said, what is your message to the African diaspora? I didn't say Kenyan. I said African diaspora. And Roger, you raised this question, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago. Zebron, I want you to respond first. She said, we hold the key to change. What is your comment on that? Zebron, are you there? Okay. Dr. Patrick, she said we hold the key to change.
Yes. What I believe she is speaking of is we have the Western know-how when it comes to capitalism, when it comes to making money, when it comes to effectuating social and political and economic change. That's the key. And however, it's how we turn the key. I think the best way the African diaspora can turn the key is whenever they visit their respective homes, respective countries, bring with them two things. One is the love of family. You're going to visit your family, your relatives, that's for sure. But the second is to bring a job, meaning bring an enterprise in which you can develop within the district, within the province, within the country. So you not only bring gifts to the family, as we all do, but you also bring a job, meaning create a business. And you create the business on the Western principle of politics, economics, as well as social development.
That's very interesting. She made another statement. She said, go back to your village. How do you respond to that?
I would agree, you know, because when we go back to the village, they'll say, man, we're good together with Sewe, but look, he has changed. You know what I'm, you know, they'll see there's something different about you, and you inspire them to change too. I agree. Go back to your village. Same, I think Dr. Patrick have touched a little bit of it. It's a go to your family, and don't be scared of going back and take something to with you. If it's you know, start up a small business. If it's teach them music, or if it's anything, you know, take something back to them, because we have learned a different way how to approach music. I mean, there's a lot of things in music too. We can teach our people. They are born with music, but there's so much. So we can contribute that, and the way we process food, the way we do the different things. I agree, Nathan, and thank you again for giving me this opportunity.
Yeah, it's very important, Dr. Patrick. When it comes to talking to leaders, we have been doing that, isn't it?
Yes, we have talked to leaders, but we forget to look in the mirror, because when we look at in the mirror, we are leaders.
Yes.
And we can start businesses, and we start at a small level, and you'd be amazed at how it will expand, because when you bring a business, regardless of what it is, you always start small. And as the old movie always say, build it and they will come. Well, it's true. You start your business, and next thing you know, you'll have banks coming into the community. You'll have gasoline stations coming into the community. And you'll have individuals that have always lived in the community approach you and say, well, I have this idea, and I could do this, and I can do this. And one job leads to another job, and another job leads to many more. So that's what I mean when you turn the key. You start small, yeah, and you'll be amazed at how it will expand. And you are the leader. You're the leader. Mm-hmm. You have experiences that you just don't imagine or can't imagine how useful it will and it is when you go to a community. You say, well, there are so many, give me an example, there are so many plumbers in New York City. What can I bring as a plumber? And you go to a rural district, you're the only plumber.
Mm.
And you can teach many people to become plumbers. And throughout the world, everyone needs a plumber. Same thing for electricians. Same thing for doctors. Same thing for chemists. Same thing for economists. You're one here in your respective country, in the United States or in the EU. But you are so much important when you go to a province or a district in an African country. That's what you bring. Turn that key.
Yeah. You are listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio, and we're broadcasting to you live from the great city of Dallas, Texas. And if you would like to make a comment or you want to follow what we do, we have a website, zambiablocktalkradio.com. We are on Facebook, Zambia Block Talk Radio, and we are also on Twitter at Zambia Block Radio. Roger, I know when she said, and you can also comment from whichever angle you wish, I know when she said, go back to your village, your heart must have leaped.
Of course it did. Of course it did, Nathan. And the first question you dealt with Dr. Patrick, what do we bring the day we arrive back home? You and I think if there's one thing we have educated ourselves on this radio, it is the anti-attack. I think we've done that very, very well, and we shall never stop. You and I have seen that you can have a Dallas, a well-functioning Dallas, without the influence of Washington State under whatsoever. You don't need to travel to Washington for anything. Where I here in Okotoks, I don't need to go to Ottawa for anything, absolutely nothing. I don't need to go. One day when we go, our numbers, as big as they are, we are going to tell our people, first in Kitwe where I come from, do we really need the central government to tell us to sweep our own streets? Do we really need a help from central government? Because that is the mindset of Lusaka. Our government, we even call them government has done this. Government hasn't done this. Government hasn't. That is the one element. I think if we are going to be agents of change when we go back to Zambia, we are going to bring. It's the element to say, Luapula or Kawambwa can survive. What are the resources we have around here? Before Lusaka can even come in, what are the resources we have here which we can export, make sure we control the flow of that money and build our own schools. That is one thing. I think, Nathan, if we have learned anything here in North America, don't go back to Zambia, build your house in Lusaka, and stay there. You have wasted your time living here in diaspora.
Go to Chembe.
Go to Chembe. Go and make yes.
That's a good one. Dr. Chongo, what is the significance of us taking charge of our economy? Because you heard Honorable Sabina say something which is not strange to Africa or any African country for that matter. Zambian scenario is the same. Almost every major industry or business is operated by, I say, so-called investor or foreigner. We find it so easy to give things to foreigners rather than empower on our own people. What is the significance of us investing and taking charge of our economy, Dr. Chongo? Okay. Dr. Chongo is... Zebron, can you hear me? That's the way. What is the significance?
Nathan, maybe I can jump in very quickly there. Maybe I can jump in. I agree that at one point government should empower the people in Kasempa, in Luwingu, government should empower them. Should empower us. One of the young leaders who came here from Yali, if you remember that young man, he spoke very, very, my language, so to say, what I want to hear. Whatever government gives you, remember, government will take it away. We've seen the empowerment of the PF government to the ministers. We see how they are tossed around without any respect. That is the way governments do things. The first question, in my view, Nathan, should be how should we now begin to empower ourselves? Once we empower ourselves, Nathan, even the government will come. Dr. Patrick talks about these things all the time. When you build something, even today you mentioned this, when you build something in Zambezi, you will see how many people are going to be attracting to that place. Even members of MPs who want to come and catch the ribbon once you do that. So I think our focus should be doing what can we do within ourselves, within our own means, to begin to build ourselves before we can even attract the selfish politicians to come in our business.
I think it's extremely important. I don't know whether Dr. Chongo is on now. Dr. Chongo, are you there? Okay. These things...
Nathan, do you want me to add on what's the importance of us owning our own business? Nathan, can you...
Yes, go ahead, Rachel, go ahead.
Yeah. Again, these things, it's not like I'm making it up and it's not like I'm picking on someone else. I travel a lot. And I see places where they have taken say we want to own our own businesses, and the communities where the businesses are not owned, they look somewhere else. It makes you sad, the way the people live where they don't own their own things, and the people where people take leadership and say we will take the responsibility and we want to take care of our communities. It is very important for us to be in charge of in our own community, to have our own business, because that's how we build leadership, that's how we motivate people to come up with new ideas, that's how we give good life to our communities, is for us to take a leadership, and I hope our governments that they realize that, Nathan. And I don't know if coming to America, I'll pick on our Indian friends in Zambia. When the government gives them so much business, don't get me wrong, there's some Indians who have done a lot in a business, and they have invented, they have changed the American businesses. But you look at some people that the Zambian government, they give business to, and the people that we respect, that they will change the community. When they come to America, it's kind of, they can't run the same businesses like the way they were doing back home, so that when you're saying about our government, they should empower our own people instead of empowering. I'm not against foreigners, but we should expect. Let me pick my own government on that issue, Nathan. I know they haven't done a lot to empower the Zambian people. They have concentrated most on, especially our Asian friends, Indian friends, the government did empower them a lot. And it's not that I don't like them. It is true. When we go to Zambia, you see most of wholesales and most of things, you know, shops and stuff like that, because they have access to funds and, you know, more than Zambians. So, but when they come here, they're not as, you know, some of them, not all of them.
You see, the important thing is, as we continue our discussion, we just want to inform the people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that the members of staff from the consular department of the embassy in D.C. are in town to renew your passports. If you have any questions, you can call Mr. Mlenga on 240-505-9101. So that exercise is going on from yesterday. Today and tomorrow, the embassy staff are in Dallas, Texas, doing the passport stuff. You know, the other thing is that, like Roger said, this is, we keep saying, I'm here also just challenging myself. We keep saying government empowering its people, government empowering its people. But don't you really think to some extent we are to blame ourselves? Anybody can respond to that. Dr. Patrick, Roger, anybody here. Don't you think we are the electorate, or so to speak, the people are to blame themselves?
I would say it's a duality here. The people are to blame because they lack information. If they were to receive information, then they would excel as any other community, as any other individual, as any other Asian. So it's an absence of information. The second thing is, when I mentioned, and I'm saying this with a caution, when I mentioned we in the diaspora hold the key to economic and political and social progress, my encouragement to everyone in the diaspora is, with that key, give it to a indigenous Zambian or an indigenous Kenyan or an indigenous Angolan, and let them open the door. You provide the instructions and the directions, but let them open the door. If you do not do that, then every diasporan will be looked upon as a foreigner, regardless of if you're a diasporan from Zambia, a diasporan from Ghana, you're looked upon as a foreigner. And the difference between us as African diasporans is that we could say, well, my mother, my aunt, my grandmother, my father lives in this district, and then you'll be looked upon differently. However, that difference also comes with a certain degree of arrogance. That's why do not go and think you're going to change the world. You must always have an indigenous person in the community that you can work with, that they will open the door of economics, and then you can build it together, create a partnership. And within a year or two or 3 years, that trust as being a diasporan will be created, and you yourself can continue to open up other doors.
One of the things, Roger, one of the things that came out or stood out from our discussion with Honorable Sabina is that you can clearly tell that we have issues with our colonialism.
To some extent, yes. To some extent, I may agree with her. But in that point, I disagreed with her. Our colonial masters, they may have maybe, I don't know what is the word, but to me, they gave us the template. what a good school should look like. This is what a good school look like. How caring and loving for each other they may not have loved us so much, but we may have looked at them the way they treated each other with empathy. This is how a good hospital should look like. Even if you are in prison, maybe in those days, I think the prisoners, they ate even 3 meals with the colonial master.
All right, if you can take that.
Okay, with the colonial master. So I may not agree blaming the colonial masters is the right answer. Or do I agree with her? She's blaming the people always asking from government. They're not doing anything. Again, Dr. Patrick has ably said it here. People lack education, lack information. So instead of government sitting down and saying, what are the elements our people are missing? Are missing out to be, you know, self-sustaining, information-wise. A small block talk radio like ours, we were able to go in the villages, tell the people, yes, there is more to life than just Lusaka. There is a little bit more out here. You can sell your product. People are lacking information instead. So I don't agree with her, even a bit, that blaming the colonial masters is the best for us. The colonial masters, in my view, left us good structures when they left. You go back to Kitwe, it's all gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you see, the thing is that, okay, Zebron is alive now. Zebron, I've been calling you and...
I'm so sorry.
Okay, go ahead with your comment, because... on the things, whatever you wanted to say, and with some of the comments, because you see, Honorable Sabina made a comment and she said, who is really attacking us? To me, it sounds like they are not ready to face the real issue of within their circles, they are corrupt people, like we are saying about Boko Haram in Nigeria. The Nigerian government was reluctant to share intelligent information with their American counterparts because I'm told the Nigerian security forces is compromised, as Zebra.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You know, there's over Boko Haram, I mean, I like Nigeria, but I know over Boko Haram, Nigeria screwed up. You know what I'm saying? We didn't take that thing very seriously. And then, I just don't like the thing like, oh, Barack Obama took so much time to respond about it. You know, for me, at this age, you know, Africa should be independent, you know, over Barack Obama, over ourselves. Africa should be independent. If we have our own problems, we should be able to have our own leaders stand up. We shouldn't wait for the West to come and respond to us. That thing should be of old age. You know what I'm saying? And then quickly, I just wanted to respond to Roger's thing about colonization. You know, I may agree over colonization that these guys came, they took that stuff. But on the other hand, to me, I don't really appreciate how it was done. You know what I'm saying? Honestly, if you ask me, I'd have loved for Africa to remain the way they were. We speak Swahili as our national language, so that if someone comes to America, they learn Swahili. If people go to America or Europe, they learn their language. Because we have other continents like Asia, for example. They speak Mandarin. They speak peacefully. If they can't hear, they learn English. But they go back, they speak their language. If you go to France, they have French. If you go to Mexico, they're proud to speak Spanish. Even if Mexicans come here, they still teach their kids Spanish. But for us, the colonization has screwed our mind where we only think of the West as something superior. And yet we invite the West to come and take over of everything that we do. You just said not too long ago that a lot of tourists in Africa is run by foreigners. What does that mean? That means that people come over there to spend their money and they come back. You know what I'm saying? And then look at it like, oh, those are development. You know what I'm saying? So for me, each time we look at the West coming into our eyes to teach us what they taught us, they have exploited it. You know what I'm saying? They have exploited everything. If we had remained the way they were with our resources, probably we couldn't have been the way we are right now. Right now you have countries that speak Portuguese, French, English, Dutch, and everything. That's the confusion that has been made within Africa. You know what I'm saying? There's like so much confusion. Like if you go to here, you don't know what they're talking about. Their culture is different. So we have so much different culture. You know, the colonization brother, so much different culture that we don't even know how to handle it. We are confused. That's why if you go to these guys that are Islam, they are killing each other. These guys are making some laws that are weird. These guys are like raping kids. You know, before that, we had our own culture that I believe we should have been proud of, and we should have been able to develop from there. We should have been able to be identified with what we had. Right now, we are identified because of what the West brought to us. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if what I said makes sense.
And you see, Zebron and everybody listening, that is my whole objective of doing this series, holding African governments accountable. We need to take charge of our own destiny. And again, I did not also agree with the sentiment of saying, were the morality in America responding 3-4 weeks after those girls were abducted? This is not an American problem. What
exactly.
have you been doing about it? Al-Shabaab has been attacking people in Kenya for how long now? The question is, what has the Kenyan government done to improve on the security of its citizens? These guys keep walking into markets and they plant bombs and they get away with it. That needs to stop. It's the Kenyan government responsibility. It's the Nigerian government responsibility. It's the Zambian government responsibility to provide security. Let's not talk about development. You build a small road here and there, and you say development. Meanwhile, you're not doing anything about security. Air Force planes keep dropping out of the sky in Zambia, and what are we doing about it? And we say we are developed. Come on, let's get our act together. That has been our show today. Join us next week. I thank my colleagues Twambo and Roger for the earlier shows and the discussions, and everybody that has joined us today. Please join us next week. Remember, if you need to follow us, we are on Twitter at Zambia Block Radio, Facebook, Zambia Block Talk Radio. The Zambian Embassy staff, if you need to have your passport renewed, you can go there at the hotel and get in touch. Have a great weekend, everybody. Tatawasa, tanitisha lufianya, titimukuru sosala Tuwasa loka fweba vimba, ifecha mfumu wesu watuka muma pepala Lekeni ndipusheko, aoba polisi lekeni ndipusheko Ala tatawasa takwena na mutinja, mutiri mula landa bemba nolonyanja Hili achita mafunde liena lilishani, mulefu nyaluisa constitutioni One day na wakateka, face to face, pirato nakateka One day na wakateka, face to face, pirato nakateka Hili achita kabunga, mwaleti kakawela Nomba tualita mpati karila pamela Use wakateka, ngawaila mula damba TV Atumuti wa shota uwa HIV Babululu wesu walipa 5 Kutevena kutiva chita survive One day na wakateka Face to face, pirato na kateka One day na wakateka Face to face, pirato na kateka Chacha wa sacha Yose pa mulungu mwalea na kuteti Tuale mfalako kumimona mupenti Chacha wa sacha Lekeni ndipusheko Aho muindika talekeni ndipusheko Imwe wakateka fionse ni mahala Nga salari enu muhivo mfya kunshi Tata basa